This is David Cross with Bowtie Tours, and welcome to Chasing American History. Today we are going to do a special episode. We are going to be talking about one of the tours we offer, which is the Thomas Jefferson Tour. And so today we're just going to be chatting a little bit about Thomas Jefferson and the Thomas Jefferson Tour. You know, some people would say that I'm really barking up the wrong tree here. Yesterday I was doing some research for my website and so forth, and I was taking a lesson about how to learn about Google clicks, who clicks for what, how many people are looking into a certain area, and some of what I saw was pretty disturbing. The site I was looking at took me back to 2004, and since 2004 there has been a dramatic decrease in people looking into history tours and even into just plain American history. Now that really shouldn't surprise anybody. I've seen that in my own lifetime. I've seen that in terms of the general knowledge people have of American history. And I've said many times on this program that we're in a crisis, that if we do not know our own history, then we cease to become a country. And one of the reasons I started working in this area is that I want to work with those of you out here who feel the same way, those of you out here who are concerned about whether your kids are receiving any kind of instruction in school, those of you who love American history and want to keep it alive, those of you who feel passionate about it. You know, I want to offer programs that are good for everybody. I want to offer programs that are going to interest younger people, but I also want to offer programs for those people I call the C-SPAN threeers, the people who are already huge history students, fans, geeks, nuts, whatever you want to call it, the people who have all the books in their bookshelf, the people who watch C-SPAN 3, C-SPAN 2 every weekend when it's book weekend, and the people who use their vacations to get closer to history. What we try to do is make history come to life. And the way that history can come to life is that you chase it down, you follow it, you go to places where things happened, and you feel the reverberations from the ghosts that are still out there walking along. Somebody repeated something to me today that, according to a science journal, every time we breathe, if we're living in the Northeast, we breathe in a molecule that was breathed once by Julius Caesar. I don't know if that's true, but I do know that when you go to places that were important to that person, you get closer to that person. That was a big part of the book I wrote about the presidential libraries, getting close to the presidents. And what I want to do is participate in taking people on trips that are going to get them to know some of the biggest figures in our history. And the two major tours we're offering right now, there's one on George Washington and one, of course, on Thomas Jefferson that we're going to be discussing today. Now, before I start telling you what you can expect when you go on this trip, let me just talk to you about some of the books that are out there. You know, these trips are all the more meaningful if you've done some reading beforehand, if you've done some thinking about the person beforehand. And there are a lot of books out there on Thomas Jefferson. I'm just taking a look at my bookshelf as we speak, and of course, I have the Dumas Malone series. Old fashioned, perhaps, it still may be my favorite. Six books. I like multi-volumes. I understand that most people are not going to want to plow through six volumes, and so I have some other books to tell you about. But this is a great book in terms of a great seven books in terms of actually feeling like you're living through the life with the character. My problem with the one-volume biography that's so in vogue now is sometimes to me it feels more like a curricula vitae than a biography. I like to go through the slow periods with my figure. You know, if you're going to read about Churchill, for instance, you need to read about the wilderness years. You need to read about him worrying about Marlborough and doing that biography and being upset because he's shut out of the government. And you have these periods with Thomas Jefferson as well. And if you're really going to understand your character, that means you got to learn all about him. you don't just learn what he accomplished. If that's all you do, then there's no humanity to the whole exercise. You're just learning about the great exploits of somebody, but you're losing the humanity. You're losing the context that the great exploits derive from. So what we want to do is get to know Thomas Jefferson, and that means the good and the bad and the ugly, folks. There's a lot of bad stuff out there about Thomas Jefferson. I understand that. I understand that there are people in UVA now who want to take down Jefferson's statue and want to cease quoting Thomas Jefferson. And, you know, that's because he made some terrible ethical errors in his lifetime, or terrible ethical choices in his lifetime, and he has to own that, and that's going to be part of his historical reputation. There's a reason Benjamin Franklin, I believe, made sure his name was on the petition filed by Quakers in the Congress in the early years of our country, arguing for the abolition of slavery, and that's so that those of us here today would be able to say, hey, Franklin was against slavery. He signed this petition. He was part of the anti-slavery movement. He was opposed to slavery. Thomas Jefferson, we can't say that. So we have that issue. It's always there. Jefferson and slavery. And of course, that's going to be part of the tour. But we want to look at Jefferson's entire life. We want to look at what he accomplished. We want to look at, as I say, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So, books on Thomas Jefferson you might be interested in besides the Dumas Malone. I'm looking here, and another book I like a lot. Just a moment. Pull it out here. I love this book by Andrew Burstein and Nancy Eisenberg. It's called Madison and Jefferson. Now, a lot of times when people do these double biographies, it's just a shtick. You end up just reading two shortened biographies of two characters, and someone's able to sell a publisher by calling it something new. Oh, this is totally different. This is Washington and Madison. Oh, this is totally different. This is Hamilton and Madison, whatever. Often, there's nothing new there, but that isn't true. Andrew Burstein and Nancy Eisenberg, they are two fantastic scholars, married to each other, and they really take, I mean, this is an important subject, Madison and Jefferson. We'll be talking about that subject throughout the tour. Madison's the most important person in Jefferson's political life. And so if you read this book, it not only gives you a background of Jefferson, but it gives you a background of Madison as well, and really shows you how these two combined to become such an important team that had such an important effect on the country. Joseph Ellis's book, American Sphinx, is very good. For those of you who haven't heard, I'm going to mention it every time I mention Joseph Ellis. When I asked him to sign my books at a recent book signing, he was very grumpy and curmudgeonly about it, and I brought, I think, about six books, and he said, well, I'm not signing your name on all six of them. I don't have the time. You know what? He had the time. There wasn't that many people in the line. At this day and age, I think historians need to be glad there's anybody left reading books. And if somebody shows up at your book signing who's clearly read through 80 of your books, you should be jumping over the moon, given the day and age we live in right now. Just saying. His books are great, and American Sphinx is a great book. There's a couple very good books about specifically Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence. One is called Inventing America by Gary Wills. Everything Gary Wills writes is good. This is a great book. He's got a great book on Lincoln and the Gettysburg Address. He's got a great book on the Federalist Papers. If Gary Wills is the writer, it's probably worth reading. Another one is called American Scripture, Making the Declaration of Independence by Pauline Mayer. Pauline Mayer, another fantastic historian who certainly does not get enough credit. Now, we mentioned Andrew Burstein because of his book Madison and Jefferson. I also like his book The Inner Jefferson, Portrait of a Grieving Optimist, and I like his book Jefferson's Secrets. Now, I like my biographies to have a little bit of life to them, to not just be mere recitations. And so the books I talk about as my favorites usually have some kind of spirit and some kind of point of view. Other books that'll give you a perfectly understandable explanation of Jefferson's life. One is a new one I'm looking at now, John Bowles, Jefferson, Architect of American Liberty. There's another one people like by John Meekham, Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power. When I met John Meekham, again, I had a number of books, and he was very kind about signing them all. Now, there's a new book out by Gordon S. Wood. I have not had the opportunity to purchase it yet, but it's called Friends Divided, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And that's a miraculous story about the friendship between these two. And Gordon Wood, I've read several of his other books, and he's a brilliant writer, so I'm sure this is going to be a good book as well. Now, having said all of this, once you sign up for the tour, the first thing we do is send you a complimentary copy of Joseph Ellis's book. American Sphinx. And the reason I choose that book is because it's very informative, it's very well written, it is not very long. It's something that everybody can feel very comfortable reading before the tour begins. And it's going to help to get you to know Thomas Jefferson better. And if you read that book before you go on the tour is going to be that much more enjoyable. The tour begins in Philadelphia. Now, for those of you arriving by airport, you'll be given a complimentary ride to the hotel. And on the very first night, we are all going to have a meet and greet at the City Tavern. This is enjoyable because it provides us the opportunity of getting to know each other a little bit before we get started on the tour. I always find it's very helpful to know reasons that people are taking the tours, what they particularly want to get out of it, where they're from, all of those kind of things. It's also important because this is City Tavern. This is where Thomas Jefferson spent many an hour in the exact area that we'll be at, discussing matters of great import, not just to this country, but to all of humanity. So we're going to start to pick up that vibe right from the very beginning by meeting at the City Tavern and discussing the upcoming trip and discussing Thomas Jefferson and anything else you all want to discuss. Now, the very first day is going to be in Philadelphia. Philadelphia was Thomas Jefferson's second favorite city, his first, of course, being Paris. I can't include Paris on the trip. I'm sorry. I'd like to, but that would probably make expenses be a little bit prohibitive, so you may have to do that one on your own. But we will be visiting his second favorite city, Philadelphia. And Thomas Jefferson accomplished a great deal out here in Philadelphia. Now, first of all, this is where he writes the Declaration of Independence. So this is the place where he steps upon the world stage. 33-year-old man, not very well known at that time, and John Adams is going to ask him to be the person to pen the Declaration of Independence. People don't know that he's the one who wrote it for several years, but once it becomes known, it pretty much assures his membership into the pantheon of great Americans. He will be one of the people, along with George Washington and Benjamin Franklin, that Americans look toward. Of course, we're not only going to see the place where he wrote the Declaration of Independence in his apartment room on 6th and Market Street, but we're also going to see where he and the other members of the Second Continental Congress signed the Declaration of Independence, which is in what is now called Independence Hall, and what was at the time called the State House. I always tell my tours that this is the most important building in the whole country when it comes to American history, and I believe that it is. And if you have not seen it, if you have not been inside it, you are in for an incredible experience. It's just something that every American ought to see. I mean, people come from thousands of miles to see this place because this is the birth of modern democracy. Thomas Jefferson isn't just trying to create a new system that's going to work for this country. He's planning to change the world. And this is the building where it begins. This is the building where they signed the Declaration of Independence. It's also the building not directly involved with Jefferson, but also the building where they happened to write and sign the Constitution of the United States. So, as I say, a pretty important building. And you're going to enjoy seeing where the Declaration was signed. We're also going to go over to Congress Hall, which is right next door to where the State House was. And we're going to see where John Adams was inaugurated president. The first time in modern history where anything like this had happened, one man ceding over his power to another democratically elected individual. And there in that room was Thomas Jefferson, who was going to be the vice president under John Adams. We're going to go upstairs and see where the Senate used to reside, and we're going to see exactly where Thomas Jefferson sat when he presided over the Senate. Now, Adams had tried to really shape discourse for a while and discuss things with the Senate, and he was slapped down. Jefferson sat up there writing furiously away, and what he was doing was basically ignoring all that was going on around him because he really had no role constitutionally in the discussions going on. So what he was doing was penning the book, really, that would be for all future vice presidents on how the office worked and how future vice presidents should conduct themselves. Always trying to get things done, Thomas Jefferson, never wanting to waste time. He didn't just want to sit there twiddling his thumbs. So instead, while everybody is up there talking, he's writing a document that's going to become a significant and important thing for all future office holders of the office of the vice presidency. These are some of the most important years of Thomas Jefferson's life. It's here where he's going to be the Secretary of the State, and we're going to see where he does battle with Alexander Hamilton. We're going to see where Alexander Hamilton actually lived, so I can show you the spot where he actually met, or around the spot where he actually met with Mariah Reynolds. And this is, of course, the great story of the Washington administration, the fight between Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton that's really going to create the two-party system. We're going to look at the First National Bank, which was a matter of incredible discord between Jefferson and Hamilton, and we're going to learn how the creation of that bank helps bring about the two-party system. Jefferson and Madison are going to put together a party, whether they want to admit it or not, whether Jefferson wants to say it or not. Of course, he doesn't. He always claims to be above party. But with Jefferson, there's always the real and the imagined. There's the polite discourse and what he's actually trying to do. And Jefferson believes that his country is in grave danger and that it's going to require the efforts of both him and James Madison to protect the country from basically being taken over by monarchical factions led by Alexander Hamilton, who want to turn the country not into the Eden that Thomas Jefferson wants it to be, but into a country just like others. You know, Hamilton wants a country with a large army and a big banking system and a big government, and Jefferson says, no, we're escaping all of that. We don't have to do that. We've got all these miles of ocean away from Europe, and we can create our own Eden. And we can create a place with such freedom where you can worship as you please. And it's going to be such a great country that we're going to conquer the world, not by armies. We're not going to have an army. We are going to conquer the world by ideas. Those ideas first manifested by Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. So it's a great story that goes on in Philadelphia involving Thomas Jefferson, and it's going to be very exciting to share that story with you. Now, on that night, we offer something for those of you who wish to do it. This is where I live, Philadelphia, so what I'd like to do is invite people to my home where we have a Jeffersonian dinner. I cook a dinner that's much like Thomas Jefferson would have cooked. I am a vegetarian, but for the most part, so was Thomas Jefferson. He would have a small piece of meat or a small piece of fish that was really more of a garnishment than anything else. For those of you who that doesn't sound so good, I will say that, he also believed strongly that you had to have a very good bottle of wine at every meal, so I can promise you that as well. Some of you might want to just go out and visit Philadelphia and see Philadelphia for your own. And one thing, you know, I feel about tours is you should let people do what they want to do. I mean, I don't like a tour that I know if I was on a tour, I'd want some time to wander about. I'd want some time by myself. I'd want some time to think. So we provide lots of opportunities, but there is no need to worry that if you want to go off the beaten track and do something, you know, you're an adult. This is a tour for your enjoyment and your edification, so you should do as you want to do. But I do invite everybody to my home to have a Jeffersonian dinner. And on that first night, we go on what's become a popular tour here in Philadelphia called Sex and the First City. This is a tour that in which we discuss the private lives of the founders. So there's a lot to talk about in terms of Thomas Jefferson. And of course, we'll really kind of focus on Thomas Jefferson on this particular Sex in the First City tour. However, there's also a lot of interesting stories about Washington and Madison and Hamilton and the founders that were in Philadelphia. So we'll see some of the places where things happened and so forth. And it's a lot of fun. But again, if you'd like to visit Philadelphia on that night, you want to do something on your own, obviously that's something you are free to do. On day two, we are going to go to Natural Bridge, Virginia. Natural Bridge was a place that Thomas Jefferson absolutely loved. Jefferson never had the opportunity to go to California. Jefferson never had the opportunity to go very far west. So there was less to observe of America than there is today. But one of the things that he observed that he found to be one of the most magnificent spots in the world was Natural Bridge. He cared so much about this place that he purchased it in order to protect it from being overrun by speculators or turned into hotels, which later it was turned into hotels. Then it's kind of retained its original purpose. History lovers have kind of taken it on and brought it back to what it once was. But the bridge has always been there, and we want to take a look at that bridge. It's said that George Washington threw a rock over it. Thomas Jefferson definitely loved it because he wrote about it. He wanted Maria Causeway to visit him and to visit Natural Bridge with him. And it's a beautiful town. We're going to stay at a nice hotel out there, have a nice dinner there, and we're going to not only see the bridge that Jefferson loved so much, but we're going to be able to take some walking trails around Natural Bridge. You know, to be a true Jeffersonian, it isn't all about natural rights. It isn't all about political doctrine. Jefferson loves nature. And so I feel like it's important to make nature a part of this tour and to pick his favorite natural spot, Natural Bridge. And it's a beautiful place for us to spend a little time, to walk the trails, and of course, to discuss Thomas Jefferson. Now, after that, we're going to visit on day three, Poplar Forest and Williamsburg, Virginia. Poplar Forest was Jefferson's second home. Hey, you're saying Monticello wasn't enough for him? Well, no. He'd like to have a second home, mainly because when he retired, it was expected of a person in his station, that if you showed up to his home, he would entertain you. So if you showed up at Monticello, Thomas Jefferson was basically required to give you dinner, to find you a room to stay in. Now, he did follow along the European method that he said, you're not going to see me for the first half of the day. If he hadn't done that, he wouldn't have been able to accomplish anything in those years. But he was going to keep himself alone during the first half of the day, but he would let you know that there were horses over at the stable, that there were books in his library, you know, a number of things. There would be a breakfast set out for you, and then he would meet at dinner, which was, of course, much earlier than the dinners we have now. He would meet you for dinner. He would bring a book sometimes. If the people weren't interesting, he would read his book. So some people consider that to be very rude. Again, this is a man who doesn't want to waste time. He, in one of his letters to his daughter, he said, "How much can be done if we are always busy doing?" And that was kind of one of the main ethos of Thomas Jefferson's life. So at any event, we're going to visit Poplar Forest, which is a wonderful thing, wonderful place. And then we're going to go to Williamsburg, Virginia. Thomas Jefferson loved Williamsburg, Virginia. Now, he didn't love the architecture. We'll talk about that. But we're going to go to Raleigh's Tavern, where he was shot down by a particular young woman who he was extremely enamored with. And we'll see that. And then it's time to have our fourth day of the tour, in which we're going to see a couple incredible places. First, we're going to stop for a little while and visit Montpelier, which is James Madison's home. You know, Madison's so important in the life of Thomas Jefferson. This was the most important partnership in the history of this country. This was the partnership that created the party that Thomas Jefferson ended up heading. And this was a party that controlled things for quite a while. Now you had George Washington is the first president, of course, then you have Adams, and then Thomas Jefferson, when he's elected, he calls this the Revolution of 1800. It really is a revolution in his mind. He has defeated, by defeating his friend John Adams, the forces of, in his mind, the forces of monarchy, the forces that would allow the country to go into a very perilous course, and he has saved the republic from the likes of Hamilton and so forth. And you're going to have Jefferson, who's a Republican, Madison is going to follow him, who's another Virginia Republican, Monroe is going to follow him, who's another Virginia Republican. So you're going to have kind of a dynasty of the same party running things. That all comes about from the organization that was created by Madison and Jefferson. I love the letters of Adams and Jefferson. They're the most enjoyable letters that you can possibly read. But the letters between Madison and Jefferson may be the most illustrative letters. I mean, they're fascinating as they discuss the Constitution while it's being written, as they discuss what's going on while George Washington is president. They really show us a lot about what was going on in the country at the time. And so it's important, I think, to visit Montpelier, but we, of course, need to save the bulk of the time for Monticello. Monticello is the most stirring of any of the founding fathers' homes. And I say that because it's not only where Jefferson lived. It's like it's his baby. It's his creation. You know, to understand Jefferson, you have to understand Monticello. You have to understand this man who is going to build a house on top of a mountain. Now, that's not a normal thing to do. That's not normal, especially if you don't have any money, which he didn't, which we will also discuss during this trip. But Jefferson's not going to back down on this. As a young man, he's lying down on the top of that mountain, and he tells his friend that he's going to build a house on there. And he does. He's going to build that house. It doesn't matter that it makes no sense. It doesn't matter that you have to level the mountain. It doesn't matter that there's no water up there, so you've got to create some kind of new well. It doesn't matter that then the well's not going to bring enough water and that then you're going to have to transport water. It doesn't matter that you're going to have to build a factory to build the bricks to build the house. You know, none of this matters because Thomas Jefferson is going to have the exact personification of who he is put into architecture. So those of you who are into architecture, this is an incredible thing. For those of you who are into history, this is an incredible thing. And I really can't tell you how stirring it is to go to this house. Now, it's also can be a very upsetting experience to come to this house. This house is created by slavery, and you feel the effects of slavery throughout the house. You know, it's said that Jefferson creates the dumb waiter because he's so ashamed to have slaves come in and serve food, especially when he's with people from other cultures, other countries, that he's created the dumb waiter so that it's kind of like Star Trek, you know, the food just arrives. We're going to see where they have refurbished the hut where they believe Sally Hemings lived. And we're going to discuss, of course, Jefferson and slavery. And we're going to discuss Sally Hemings. Wonderful book about the Sally Hemings family, by the way, written by Annette Gordon Reed, called The Hemingses of Monticello, which, again, for those of you interested, that's out there. But we can talk about all these things, we can read about all these things, but I can promise you this. I don't know what you're going to feel when you go to Monticello, but you're going to feel. And that's the purpose of this trip. I want you to feel something. I want you to feel goosebumps. I want you to feel excited and thrilled, maybe angry, maybe upset, maybe disappointed. But you're going to feel something, and you're going to get to know Thomas Jefferson at a much deeper level than you ever did before. Now, there's going to be one more treat for us before the tour ends completely. We offer to either take you back to Philadelphia or to drop you off at Dulles Airport. That's kind of up to you and your travel arrangements about how you want to leave, but we are going to stop by and visit the Jefferson Memorial, which is, I think, one of the most beautiful memorials that our country has. I love the Lincoln Memorial. I love the Jefferson Memorial. And yes, this is a statue, and there's been a lot of discussions about statues, and of course, there was a huge disturbance in Charlottesville, Virginia, Jefferson's home, about the Robert E. Lee statue. People say you can't take a statue down, that's changing history. Well, I don't believe that, but I believe we have to be very thoughtful about these things. Thomas Jefferson was a slaveholder. Thomas Jefferson wrote down some unpalatable opinions to today's eyes. At the same time, Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, and it was the theories he espoused which now protect all of us. You know, I think maybe the most important speech Barack Obama ever made was about race. It was in 2008, and Obama was in trouble because the preacher at his church had made some ugly comments and possibly racist comments, and Barack Obama made a speech where he said, "I can't completely turn my back on him any more than I can completely turn my back on my white grandmother who used to make racist comments. We don't advance as a country by simply trying to cut these people out of society. We advance as a country when we try to include everybody and we all try to grow together." Now, we can go to a place where we cut Thomas Jefferson out of our world, but I think we lose a lot more than we gain when we do that. Gary Wills' book about Jefferson is called Inventing America. Well, what does Gary Wills mean? Well, this is what he means. This was a new kind of country. It didn't have one religion to define us. It didn't have one ethnicity to define us. Well, what made you an American? Well, the thing that made you an American, and I would argue the thing that continues to make you an American, is you believe in the words of the Declaration of Independence. That's what made you an American. You lived here and you believed in those words. That was it. Jefferson defined what we are. And we have to learn, as we look back on the founders of our past, to accept the great contributions they gave the country, while accepting, understanding, admitting their frailties, their errors, and their ethical lapses. These weren't perfect people. These were people who did things out of convenience. But at the end of the day, our country is what it is in large part because of Thomas Jefferson. We're going to visit his burial plot. We're going to see where he's buried when we're at Monticello. And he lists three things on his gravestone. He doesn't mention that he was President of the United States. That's not particularly important to him. What is important to him is that He wrote the Bill for Religious Freedom in Virginia. Well, why is that so important? In large part because after shepherding that thing through the Virginia legislature, Madison saw to it that there was a similar language in our Bill of Rights, and that that really became the law of the land, that this was going to be a country that not only allowed everyone to worship freely, but that refused to throw its power behind any particular religion, that stayed out of it. So he was very proud of that. The second thing he was proud of was the writing of the Declaration of Independence. Why that? Well, the great statement of what we stand for, that all men are created equal. He puts forth this ideal that he wasn't able to accomplish and meet in his own life, in his personal life, but he puts it out there for the rest of us. That's what Abraham Lincoln's going to argue. Abraham Lincoln's going to argue that Thomas Jefferson meant exactly what he wrote, but that he was putting it there in that paper, which, as Lincoln points out, he didn't have to go into that. All he had to say is, listen, we want to become our own country because England's treating us badly. So why does he go into all of this? Why does he go into these Renaissance ideals? Because he's putting forth a challenge for future generations to meet. And we have, to some extent, met those challenges. We're not all the way there yet. But he has every reason to want to put that on his gravestone, and to be proud of that magnificent document, which to this day is a call to those who would fight against oppression, who would fight against tyranny. Our world has not improved a great deal since Thomas Jefferson was around. We see country after country where people are imprisoned, tortured, killed, because they believe in a different religion than what the rulers believe in. That's still out there. I mean, these words that he wrote on the Declaration of Independence should mean more to us today than ever. People were arrested reading this in China not that long ago. Arrested because they were reading the words of the Declaration of Independence, words that say that the individual is more important than the oligarchy. Words that we all need to continue to remember. Words that define what this country is about. The third thing he puts is that he's the creator of the University of Virginia. Knowledge. Well, then that goes back to how this begins. We need to be educated. We need to have knowledge. We need to be thoughtful people. We're in a crisis in this country in terms of not just our historical knowledge, but thoughtful discourse. You can go on and on and on with the problems. And I think we need to take some lessons from Thomas Jefferson. We have to take lessons about thoughtful, reasoned, polite discourse between people who may disagree with each other. And we have to take the lesson that he gives us by putting the creation of the University of Virginia on his tombstone, that we want people to educate themselves and be knowledgeable, that that's the basis of a democracy. And that if we don't have that, then the whole experiment is bound to fail. So anyway, those are some of the thoughts we may be thinking as we look at that wonderful monument in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for spending your time with us as we discuss the Thomas Jefferson tour. And again, if you're interested in learning more about the tour or joining us, you can give us a call at 610-642-2410 or just check us out at chasingamericanhistory.com. Thomas Jefferson came along, so we'll sing this merry song. We're chasing American history, my friends. Every year we have a celebration because he wrote a declaration chasing American history, my friends. And so we're chasing American history, chasing American history, we're chasing American history, my friends. Chasing American history, chasing American history, we're chasing American history, my friends. As governor, he wasn't so good, so he quit the neighborhood. Chasing American history, my friends. Well, he said he wanted men to be free, how'd he live with slavery? Chasing American history, my friends. And so we're chasing American history, chasing American history, we're chasing American history, my friends. Chasing American history, chasing American history, we're chasing American history, my friends. Well, we've told you all about this tour, you're gonna wanna join us, I'm sure. Chasing American history, my friends. I know you wanna see it all, so grab the phone, give us a call. Chasing American history, my friends. And yes, we're chasing American history. Chasing American history, we're chasing American history, my friends. Chasing American history, chasing American history, we're chasing American history, my friends.